are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Journeys Unconventional with me, your host, Allie Buckley. On this podcast, I will be talking about my unconventional journey and will be joined by a handful of exceptional guests who all have beautiful journeys to share with you as well.
Keep listening and remember, be still. There is light at the end of every dark tunnel.
Okay, are you ready? Mm-hmm. Okay. So today I have with me one of, if not the most important people in my life. I have my mom here with me today. And she was probably the most highly requested guest I have on the podcast. So I saved her for last because I wanted to, you know, end the series on a good note. Not that everybody else wasn't great, but I thought that this would be a really powerful episode for not just mothers and daughters, but any parent-child relationship. I think that you could probably gain something from listening to just two people having a conversation, child to parent. So without further ado, welcome to the podcast, Mom.
Thanks, Al. Happy to be here. So excited. I've been waiting a long time.
Yeah, you have. And you've been my biggest fan really since the day I was born.
Even before that.
So yeah, it's been, you know, a long awaited time for this, but we're here now. I brought you on today because we're going to talk about us together, but more so kind of about the journey of you being my mom and my parent and what that's been like for you. And hopefully if there's any kids out there that are listening that have a difficult relationship with their parent or have a strong relationship with their parent, it can provide some sort of comfort to know that, you know, we all have our stuff and we've all got our issues. And at the end of the day, it's family that matters and it's love that matters. And so I wanted to bring you on so that we could share our relationship with people because I think it's important.
Couldn't agree more. I think the mother-daughter relationship is one that is incredibly complicated, but certainly there is light at the end of every dark tunnel.
There is. Why don't we kind of start from the beginning of like when I was younger and kind of give background on like what type of child I was and whatnot. And maybe that'll give like a better understanding of why I kind of am the way I am at 24 now.
Well, you talk about having an unconventional journey, but I think that, you know, if you look at it, we all have an unconventional journey, right? What's conventional? I guess that's what society tells us
right.
It's supposed to look like. So I mean, we all have an unconventional journey, but there's definitely, you know, areas where some people struggle more than others. And, you know, let me just preface by saying, and you know this, that I always wanted to be a mom, right?
Yeah, you did.
I wanted lots of children. I wanted 8 children.
Can you imagine 8
no.
of me's
no.
running around?
No. Well, this is why I don't have 8 children.
Because I was born and you realize, wow, exactly. Okay, I think 2 is enough.
All right. So, you know, Tim came along and then you came along very quickly on his heels. And then I had 2 children under the age of 16 months. And
Woo-woo.
That was certainly a challenge. But you came into this world 2 weeks late and you came into this world fighting for your life, literally. But I always tell you that that's how you continue to live your life. You continue to get up and fight. And I think that I admire that quality in you. I think that it's a great quality. As a mother, you know, we want our children, our daughters in particular, want our daughters to be strong. I think for you, you certainly made your needs known. So, you know, you were the second child. And again, you were so close to your brother in age. And he did have a lot of challenges from the start that were apparent. And your challenges were not apparent, right? You know, you certainly seemed plenty capable. And I think, but you were constantly, you know, letting me know that you needed just as much.
But in different ways. Like I think that we've identified too, like my inability to vocalize what was going on, or not even that, because we didn't know what was going on. So what would I have vocalized? But kind of just like everything for me, like anxiety in particular manifested in a way that was physical. And so I would let you know, because I'd be like, oh my God, my head hurts. Oh, my stomach hurts. Oh, this hurts. And it was always chalked up to like, oh, Allie, you're so dramatic. Allie's always got this. Allie's got an ailment. And well, yeah, I was, you know, very prone to injury and all these things. Like I deep down had anxiety that just we did not know about and we weren't educated on. We just did not know better.
And that's just it. Parenting you, you know, made me learn about myself. And that's for any parent, right? You know, we we just don't know about ourselves enough until we have children. Then we recreate and we end up with mini versions of ourselves. And sometimes we love that mini version. And sometimes that mini version is not something that is pleasing to us because it reminds us of the things about us that we don't like, but it's true. I think any parent would tell you that, you know, when you think about what your children will be like, you want them to have
the best qualities of you
and the best qualities of your spouse. And, you know, you want them to be this, you know, beautiful combination. And sometimes they don't come out with all those qualities. But again, I think anything can be, you know, we can find the beauty in anything.
Right.
And we can always find something about people that, you know, that we can see. Everybody's strengths can be weaknesses. But yes, your anxiety as a child, a small child, manifested in ways that I had no idea were anxiety. I just really found you to be incredibly dramatic and very vocal and very physical. I mean, you were just, you know, you had a lot of energy. And your brother was very different. You couldn't have been two more different people. And his early challenges were far more outward and physical, whether it was food allergies. His anxiety manifested differently. He truly seemed scared.
And, yeah.
You know, yeah. You know, yours came out as anger and yours came out as frustration and yours came out as stomach aches and headaches and leg cramps and lots of things that, you know, or clean your room and, you know, throw yourself into a, you know, tantrum and spin around and
wait, we're not talking about last week though.
Yeah. True. You know, but again, I think that, you know, your challenges and Tim's challenges made me realize my own challenges, which made my anxiety even higher.
Right.
And so my anxiety and the way my anxiety manifested, you know, made me respond in ways that, you know, I don't know that if I could do it all over again, I know I'd do it differently.
But you're also super anxious yourself.
I
so
am.
Like
I'm
there was something to say about like how you parented as well. And not saying that you did it wrong or right or anything like that. I'm just more or less saying like your anxiety definitely came through in your parenting at times,
absolutely.
as anybody's would. And I think it's hard for me too, because not being a parent, like I don't know what it's like to have a child and have the fear of losing a child, or the minute they walk out the door, anything could harm them and you cannot protect them all the time. And so I can understand why your anxiety would come through in the way that it was. But you were already an anxious person before having kids. So that's more like, that's what I'm saying here.
Oh, absolutely.
You yourself had your own anxiety.
I had my own anxiety. And so I didn't recognize, you know, what my anxieties were and how they manifested and how I was dealing with them. And, you know, so you have children and you're hoping that, like I said, that, you know, whatever traits you have of your own that you don't necessarily want to pass on. Sometimes it's difficult to reconcile, but yeah, you had a lot of energy. But, you know, I always got a kick out of you. You had a great sense of humor. You always brought the party. That's for sure. you continue to bring the party. You know, I think who you were as a small child, as a little girl, is who you are today. Just, you know, with all of the maturity and growth that you've had the benefit of having. But yeah, there were definitely things I think that you were struggling with that, like you said, you couldn't verbalize and that I wasn't cueing into.
Well, I think anxiety too is so hard, especially like with younger ages, because I know even now sitting here at 24 years old, and I'm sure you can identify this at 70 something years. I'm joking. Just kidding.
I'm a very young looking 70 something.
No, I'm sure that you can identify this as well, is sometimes we think we have control over our anxiety. And then the next day you're like, oh my God, I'm feeling this way. Oh my God, what's going on? And then you have to sit back and like totally pull yourself in and be like, I'm having an anxiety attack, or I'm having anxious thoughts. And sometimes even now it is so hard to vocalize what's going on. So anxiety is one of those mental illnesses that is really difficult to sometimes recognize because it can come out in so many different ways.
Well, right. But I mean, don't you think, and we talk about this a lot too, that society is finally embracing this whole mental health and mental wellness and making sure that people understand it's okay to not be okay.
Yeah. And it's right? About time that we're having these conversations.
Absolutely. Because we shouldn't hide from our emotions. We shouldn't be trying to stuff it. We shouldn't be trying to steer clear of, you know, these things that are manifesting. We need to talk about it. We need to, because we all have emotions, whether we're male or female, we're all human. Mm-hmm. We all have emotions and we need to be able to express them. And mental health is just as important as physical health. And so I think that when I think about the time that I was parenting you, I've always been somebody who reads and tries to educate myself. And that was my background. I was an elementary education major. So I thought I was coming into this world of parenting, having all of this knowledge, and I was going to be this amazing parent. And I remember Grammy laughing at me because I said that I was never going to say no to my children. I was going to walk around redirecting them everywhere. And she laughed.
And she's kept up with
yeah,
that.
Yeah. She laughed and said, yeah, let me know how that works out for you. But I think that, you know, the conversations we now have with regards to mental health and how we are trying to bring to light the importance of mental health and what anxiety looks like, what depression looks like, what mental illness looks like. It's so different.
It doesn't have like a look to it. And I think that's what's interesting about mental illness is like, and I've talked about this in a lot of my episodes, if not pretty much every episode I've touched upon mental health and mental illness. And I have said that it's kind of like addiction or cancer or anything like that. Like it doesn't have an identity to it. It could take anybody. And it doesn't matter what you look like, how old you are, when you like mental illness happens because it is the brain. And it doesn't matter what you look like. We all have brains. So it doesn't stray away from this type of person or stray away from that kind of person. Like that can come to you at any time, whether you're born with it, whether you develop it over time because of a situation. Those things, they don't just say like, well, you know, she's been through enough already. You know, we're not going to give her anxiety. It just doesn't work that way.
Well, yeah. And, you know, we talk about, having no boundaries with regards to, you know, race or socioeconomics or religion right. Or gender. And it's true. And I think that, like you mentioned, addiction definitely, you know, we're trying to remove the stigma because it is not about, you know, anybody's does not discriminate, mm-hmm. as we know. So having those conversations. So just being educated now about what it means and what it looks like. And had I known all this all these years ago, you know, it would have been so different. You know, so when you came running into our room at 5:30 in the morning, screaming like the Tasmanian devil and throwing yourself on the floor, and we had no idea what was wrong, but you were waking early and you obviously were uncomfortable. You know, there was something more going on. I wish I had more knowledge back then than I, but you know, that's okay. You turned out pretty good. You went from being, I think this is really significant to your story. And somebody pointed this out to me recently, so I can't take credit for it. Wish I could. You went from being the youngest child to the middle child to the oldest child. You've played three different roles in your life. And let's face it, every child has their identity is somewhat wrapped up in where they place in their family, right? You're the only child, you're the middle, youngest, you know, what have you. You've played three different positions in this family, right? So you were the baby, you were the middle, and now you're the oldest. And even before you were the oldest, after Tim passed, you really were playing the role of the oldest because of Tim's challenges. So you've had a lot of different roles you've had to play. I think that that's significant to who you are and who you've become.
Yeah. So we didn't really talk too much about, I haven't really talked about John a lot on the podcast. I think this is kind of like a good segue to like explain why I was middle child for a while. So
let's talk about the favorite child.
Yeah, so let's bring in the favorite child.
So let's talk about that child number three who came along at a time when it was so thrilling for our family, right? So
it was quite the surprise, Mom. It was
a surprise for everybody, but you know, there was so much joy surrounding it because,
I know, I wanted a little sister so bad.
I know, and I'm sorry.
You really disappointed me that day.
Julia, but he turned out to be John. But
actually, I'm sorry. He turned out to be Joanne.
That's right. You've come up with some really great nicknames for him that are feminine. Yeah. So, you know, you and Tim were chugging along there and happy to just, you know, be the two of you. And I used to call you thing one and thing two. And then all of a sudden entered thing three and you were both quite a bit older. So
I was 8 and a half and Tim was 9.
Well, you were 8 and a half when John was born and Tim was 10. So yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, so it was very exciting to have me, you know, because you guys were young enough that it wasn't like, oh my God, my mom's pregnant.
But no, I mean, I kind of was.
No, you guys were young, but still there was a really significant age difference between you and it really made for this really cool the family dynamic. I mean,
yeah, it did.
You and Tim were thrilled to be a big brother and big sister to this new baby and you took to this role as like second mother. I mean, you threw him over your shoulder, I think, you know, day two and we're changing his diapers and you always... even though you wanted a sister, which I've said to you would not have turned out well.
No,
that would not have worked.
No.
So God knew what he was doing. And so, you know, So John's birth was truly exciting for not only our family, but for so many other families because it was unique, you know, to be having this newborn baby at that stage in our lives. And I remember Dad joking around, you know, because he was so involved with Little League Baseball with Tim and him joking about, you know, how he was going to be walking out to the pitcher's mound when John got out there with his walker. But, you know, John actually chose lacrosse, so we didn't have to worry about that. But no, So then now, you know, you're 8 and a half years old. Now you're the middle child. You're the only girl. So, I do think that in some ways that kept you in that unique role of being the only daughter and, you know, having
made me a lot tougher.
Well, certainly. Well, you were always, but it was always your personality. It was inherently who you were to be a stronger personality and to be somebody. You were athletic and you were energetic and you were a spitfire. And so, yeah, you kept your position as only daughter, favorite daughter, but you now had this role of you had an older brother and you had a younger brother and you took to John like you just were this amazing older sister.
He told me in the car, I think yesterday, he goes, yeah, you like basically helped raise me. And I was like, really? You think so? And he was like, yeah, you're like kind of like my second mom. And I was like, all right, well, who did it better, mom or me? And he was like, well, I have a mom. It's like,
no, and I think, you know, and I even think about how John, you know, I think he thought it was so cool growing up that, you know, he had this older brother and older sister that, you know, when he'd go to Park and Rec and you guys were there.
Yeah, all of our friends just loved him.
Your older siblings, you know, had these friends that would come around and would thought he was so cool. So wherever he was getting a lot of attention. And I think he really liked that. And, you know, so I think it was just, I always loved. And so I got my third child, right? I wanted so badly to have a third child. I mean, yes, I wanted 8, but okay. At some point,
realistically, you got three and you were fine.
That, you know, I wasn't going to have 8, but you know, when I had that third child, truly, what a blessing, what a gift. I mean, you were all gifts, but you know, he changed.
But he was your favorite gift.
No, he changed. He just changed our family.
Yeah, he did.
He just changed our family. So, you know,
for the worst.
No, he changed our family.
Just
for the
joking.
What would
I'm
we
joking.
Do without John?
Oh my God.
Such a gift.
I'd go crazy. So, I could not deal with you and Dad alone.
And this is true. We couldn't deal with you without John.
let's chat high school. Your favorite part of my story.
Yeah, my favorite part of everybody's story. Boy, those years are trying. I don't think that anybody can fully prepare themselves for those years. Yeah, those were some trying years. There's no doubt about it.
High school was really hard.
Yeah, high school was hard. You know, certainly you and Tim were having your adolescent challenges back to back. And his challenges, like I said, were certainly more significant than yours. But you were giving me some of the same adolescent sass and tude sneaking out the window at, you know, 3 a.m. in the morning.
I would never.
Yeah. You know, I have a few gray hairs. I cover them well.
A few? My Lord. Don't lie to the people.
No, I cover that well. You know, it was difficult. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. I think we've chatted a lot about this, obviously. I don't know how much I've really talked about this. I kind of talked about it on the episode with Kia. High school was really hard for me in the beginning, first 2 years for sure. I definitely was bullied hard, which I've since gotten over because I'm over it and I'm older and I'm more matured. I can look back now and forgive those people because, you know, of where we were all at in our lives, and that's what it is. But it was really challenging because not only was I being bullied at that point in my life, but we were going through a lot with Tim. And I was dealing with a lot at home. And then when I went to school, or i.e. when I was running cross country and I was dealing with all this bullying, like that was an outlet for me to go and run. And then I didn't even feel comfortable there. And I like already had to run cross country with Tim and witness everything that was going on with him, not only at home, but then what he was bringing to the school, you know, and all the drama that he was in school. And he was constantly in trouble and constantly misbehaving and goofing off. And it was like, you know, he was the class clown and he was so funny and he was all these things, but he pulled a lot of drama and attention to him, which then in turn pulled attention to me. Mm. And it was really difficult for me. And I was going through so much during those first 2 years and really displaced a lot of anger and embarrassment in ways that, like, I started hanging out with like older kids and I wanted to like run from what I was dealing with and I didn't want to think about anything. There were times in high school where I totally was just like making decisions based off of the fact that I just did not care what I was doing, who I was hurting. Like, it did not matter at all because I was in so much pain myself with everything that was going on that I was just like, well, I don't really care what anybody else feels. I'm in such pain. I was so selfish those years of my life.
Well, I don't know, Allie. I mean, you're reacting as any adolescent, you know, reacts often. I mean, you don't have a capacity necessarily to, you know, to take those very, very difficult and strong situations and emotions and, you know, make choices that are in your best interest. And, you know, I think there was so much going on in our family, as you were saying, that, you know, Tim was having his challenges and a lot of focus was being put on him. You know, one of the things I've said about you, and what I recall about that time, your freshman year, when you were dealing with that bullying with cross country, I remember being in awe of you, watching you get out of bed every morning and go to school and get on that cross country field, do the things you did, regardless of the way that others were behaving towards you. You were really a talented athlete and you were strong and you were, as you are now, a beautiful young girl. You're getting the attention of upperclassmen. You're getting the attention of coaches and being awarded things because of your athleticism. And that, at that time in your life, can be very threatening to your peers.
Yeah.
I used to say to you, I don't know that I would have had the strength to stay the course. And you did, literally. And I'll never forget watching you at a race. And it was John Winthrop Middle School, and watching you run that race. And there was a girl that there was competition with, both on the field and off the field. You ran that race with everything you had. There was heckling on the sideline that Dad and I witnessed. I saw you coming out of the woods, coming across the field, giving it everything you had. And you were in the lead. And you were in the lead in that meet to be the top out of your freshman class, to be the top runner. At the end, you were overtaken by the girl that there was competition with. And my heart broke for you. But you handled it with incredible strength and grace that I don't believe I would have been able to deal. I wouldn't have been able to do that in high school. I would not have been able to deal with that and do what you did. And I remember just telling you and how proud I was of you to be a freshman in high school and to have to be dealing with that day in and day out, going to school, feeling what you were feeling, but still showing up for practice, showing up for cross-country meets. You were showing up. And to me, that was just incredible strength and beauty and grace. And but that's what you are. You show up.
You're going to make me cry.
Well, that's what I'm supposed to do, right?
That was a really difficult time, for sure. I think I proved a lot to myself during that time, too. I think I was able to dig deep for me. And I think when you're presented in situations like that, and I've been given many, I think the only option that you have is to just put your head down and keep going. The minute you stop doing or being or showing up, that's when you lose. And that's not in my blood. I just don't quit. I don't stop. I won't let that happen, because from the minute I was born, I just don't quit.
Well, like you said, you're a competitor. Now, you don't get that from me. You get that from your father. And I am not a competitive person. I never have been. I'm not an athletic person. I didn't participate in sports.
Oh, it's not just athletes. I'll flip the table on Monopoly. Don't get me wrong.
You are a natural competitor. And so, yes, you have this internal fortitude. You push forward. And so what I've seen in you throughout the years on and off the athletic field is this individual who just keeps going, who just keeps moving and doesn't stop. And I think that it is a wonderful quality, and it's what gets you out of bed every day, is that you're not going to
give up. Most days.
Well, are we going to go into that part of your life? Because my God, are we going to talk about,
my anxiety, my depression, yeah, all of that?
So high school years were challenging. They were challenging for the two of us. I think it's not easy to parent adolescents, particularly when they're undergoing, mental health challenges, whether they're dealing with any type of, whether it's bullying, eating disorder, addiction, academic difficulties. It doesn't matter. I mean, whatever our children are struggling with, we struggle right along with them. It's very difficult for us to separate ourselves and to step back and say, okay, it's their life, not ours.
Let's talk college. Okay.
Every chapter just gets scarier and scarier.
Okay. So I began playing lacrosse in third grade. I've chatted about that on the podcast before. So lacrosse became a huge part of my life. And through the years, I was playing pretty much year round. I was playing lacrosse. And it came around time where I was looking for college, and I always knew I wanted to play college lacrosse. Even from when I was like in sixth or seventh grade, I knew I wanted to go play college lacrosse. I never really had a spot in mind. I didn't have a division in mind. I just knew that's what I wanted to be doing. I remember I was in my senior class with Mrs. Burke, and we were starting the process. I don't even remember what that class was called. It was like a college prep course. Everybody was so excited. All I cared about was just finding the right lacrosse program. And so really
that gives everyone a window into what we're going to talk about, right?
Yeah. So I toured a bunch of different places. I had gotten recruited from both division one, two, and three schools. And pretty early on, I had said that I did not want to go D1. Personally, I made that choice because I knew that I probably wasn't going to go much further after college than maybe like a coaching position. There wasn't a pro league at the time. And so I remember I had said to myself pretty early on that I was going to be looking at like D2 and three schools. That was probably going to be a better balance for me. And I remember toying around with a few colleges, both two, three schools. And we really narrowed it down pretty quickly to Plymouth State University, which is a D3 school. And that was the only college I applied to. I was playing D3, so they don't need a written commitment. They just need a verbal. And then the coach can kind of like give you an idea of whether or not you're going to get into school or not based off of what your GPA is and your test scores and blah, blah, blah. So I really had a very different journey of applying to colleges, because like I wasn't waiting with bated breath to hear back from 5 different colleges. I literally only applied to Plymouth and kind of already knew I was going to get in.
Okay, so is this the point where we are authentic enough to say, you just weren't an academic?
No, I wasn't.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, and I've definitely made that clear on here. I definitely have said that I was not a student.
But I'm saying that too because there's so much more than being an academic. Now,
yeah, but wait, before you get into this, can I please finish what I was saying? No, because your point is
land the plane.
Are you freaking kidding me? You've been going on and on. You're telling me to land the plane? Are you serious? So should I keep this part in to show them how authentic this really is?
I really do.
Anyway, my journey to applying to college looked differently than other people's. So basically what I was saying before I was so rudely interrupted was that it was a much quicker process for me. I didn't wait around. I knew where I was going. And I was like, I think that's what made it so much more exciting was because like I got to know the girls that were going to Plymouth and I got to know my coach and I had visited and I had done an overnight. Like I had gotten myself so worked up about Plymouth. Like it was so anticipated. And then I went up there my freshman year and ended up breaking my wrist my freshman season. Remember?
Did you forget about that? No, of course not. I remember everything vividly. I think that for you, and as you said, you toured schools. Now, really, you know,
I toured a ton of schools.
Well, you toured a lot of schools because you traveled with your cross program that you participated in.
Nor'easter.
The Nor'easter lacrosse program took you to a lot of different places. And that really was a journey you had with your dad. You know, that was really, that's another podcast. I think that your recruitment and your want to play collegiate lacrosse really is a conversation that could be a whole other podcast.
No, I know. I was just explaining my process.
So I'm just saying to you that, yes, of course I remember, and I remember visiting New York schools with you and going up and having a mother-daughter.
Oh, yeah, Ithaca, that's right.
That's right, and we went to...
No, I did a camp at Ithaca.
You did a camp at Ithaca, and William Smith, Hobart and William Smith. We realized very quickly that those were not the schools for you and that, you weren't comfortable in that environment. And the thing about Plymouth was that what it offered and what the coach at the time was offering, which was so
inviting.
Well, I think what Dad and I felt comfortable with was that it was going to give you supports that we knew you needed in school.
It had structure.
Had structure, you know, and the program that was being run up there at the time was one that, you know, the coach had expectations that were going to, what we thought, you know, we're going to really keep you in line and knowing that, well, the lacrosse was really what you were passionate about and it gave you, you know, your identity and it was, you know, the outlet physically and emotionally, that the school, the academic piece for you needed so much structure. That coach at the time was offering so much that it really was a great fit. You are an outdoor, you're a nature loving outdoor, free-spirited, just you're a low maintenance girl, and that's a good thing, but you're not somebody who's looking for, you know, you were completely comfortable going up north and, you know, hunkering down in the winter and being a part of that campus, and you were so excited and we were excited for you. And yeah, I know that, you know, your time at Plymouth, you know, resulted in, you had expectations, the coach had expectations, you had a lot of things that, you know, just the sun, moon, and stars were not in alignment with regards to you staying there. You had your catastrophic knee injury, but I'll never forget picking you up for Thanksgiving break and driving you home. And I'll never forget you saying to me, I'm just not a student. I'm not comfortable here. This is not where I belong. You're not going to find me in the library for 3 hours. You're not going to find me in a classroom where I can sit through a 3-hour lecture. I'm just not a student. And I remember that for me, I was like, then we will find you where you need to be. And I personally believe that we all have so many gifts and talents, and you've realized your gifts and talents. You found where you belonged once you came home. It's been a long road, but
yes, it has, mother,
but that's okay. And I think that, you know, it wasn't your time.
No, I knew I wasn't, that was not where I needed to be. And I talked about that in my premiere episode. Like I talked about how my heart and my head weren't in it. And I knew at the end of the day, like, I'll never forget sitting in one of my classes. I think I told you this, remember? I was sitting there, I had my whole entire leg cast, literally from my ankle all the way up to my hip. And I've got long legs, so just, like, try to picture that. Like, very long cast.
And for you listeners out there, she gets those from me.
Okay, my mom is like 5'1". I'm like 5'7", all legs. Don't let her fool
no
you.
No one needs to know that, Allie. Okay. They can't see us.
Okay, right. I've got a face for podcasting. You're right.
I have legs for podcasting.
I was sitting in the classroom and I, like, God, Plymouth's campus was gorgeous. I mean, you look out the window and you're just staring at mountains. But I remember, like, looking out and just thinking to myself, I was like, I would rather be outside right now hiking than in this class. And I'm sure everybody would, like, who really wants to be in that classroom? But there was something, like, deeper where I was like, I don't want to be in any class. Like, I'd rather be outside every day doing something, moving my body, even though I physically really couldn't at the time. I remember just being like, I just don't belong in a classroom right now. And that's not to say that I didn't belong in a classroom later. And I wasn't saying that to myself. It was just the feeling that I was having right there in that moment. I just was like, this is so wrong. Like, everything around me just felt so wrong. And I don't know if I mentioned this, but I had changed my major 4 times in a year and a half at being at Plymouth. I had literally had no idea what I wanted to do. 4 times changing your major. I mean, like, really, talk about somebody that didn't know what they wanted.
I'm 53 and I don't know what I want to do with my life.
Well,
okay.
Anyway, I mean, it's kind of like a huge thing, like, money-wise, to just, like, play around with if you don't know what you're doing. So yeah, we made the right decision to pull me, and I think it was for the better.
I made the right decision to bring you home. You needed to heal emotionally. You needed to heal physically. And you ended up coming home. And that is a whole other journey. You came home and that was another difficult time.
Okay, so when I got my surgery back in 2015, I was coming back into the house and obviously was living in the house still. My brother also came home and was living at home pretty much right around when I was getting surgery, right? He moved back into the house with us?
He moved back home. He was living in Maine. He had been in a program in Maine for his sobriety. He was sober living in Portland, Maine, and he was struggling. And so he moved back in, I think the week of Christmas, and we had gone to pick you up from Plymouth.
Didn't he come with you? Yeah. He came with you to pick me up because he met some of the girls up at Plymouth.
No, that wasn't, you know what? That was a totally different time.
You're right. Okay. Sorry.
No, that was a wonderful memory. I remember driving into the mountains with the two of you. We had a great afternoon.
That was
a great day. I had a really good weekend with Tim that weekend, and coming to surprise you at Plymouth was really cool. He was so excited to surprise you. But no, it was Dad and I that picked you up, because I remember going and having dinner at the Panther Pub. We packed you up. And then we went and had dinner.
One last hurrah at the pub.
One last hurrah. Yeah, one last hurrah. And so, yeah, so Dad and I came. But yeah, so you and Tim both moved back into the house in December of 2015.
Oh my God, it was chaos.
And he was struggling with his sobriety, and you were struggling with your decision to come home. Well, you weren't struggling with your decision to come home.
No, I was struggling with the fact that I was just pulled from somewhere that I called home for a year and a half.
Yeah. You were struggling, you know, you were heading into surgery on New Year's Eve, and that was going to be, that was causing a lot of anxiety. And so, yeah. So, you know, now starts this new chapter, right? You know, you and Tim, young college age adults, both having your challenges. Dad and I trying to parent an elementary school child. And it was another transition for our family.
Mm-hmm.
And you both moved in, and quickly Tim started to decline.
Tim was using a lot while he was home.
He was really struggling. And
I think for me, that was really hard for me because I knew about way more of it than anybody else did. And there was consistently this burden on my back of knowing how much he was using and struggling between, do I say something or do I keep my mouth shut and be the good sister, like, and have his back. But it was this constant battle between, do I save his life or do I let the kid die? Like, I literally was battling with that. And I think for a really long time, like, Nobody understood the severity of what was going on with Tim, because I think people were like, they didn't see Tim for years. So they didn't know like what was going on. And they're like, oh, you know, like maybe you guys are overreacting. It was just really difficult because I was consistently dealing with this battle of, do I have his back in the sense where he thinks I have his back, where I'm not telling mom and dad what's going on, or do I have his back in the sense of telling you guys what's going on to save his life?
So I think, you know, what we could at this point kind of go backwards on a little bit is, you were dealing with this struggle of holding his confidence, knowing what he was doing, since your freshman year of high school.
Maybe even eighth grade, because he was a freshman when I was in eighth grade.
But I mean,
like, we were always super, super close. Like, we told each other literally everything. So there was like a blessing and a curse in that. Like, he overshared with me stuff that would be like, but don't tell mom and dad. And I'd be like, you just told me the most ridiculous thing. How am I not supposed to say anything?
Well, and I think that puts you in just such an unbelievably difficult position as a young child, that he was giving over information because Tim was honest to a fault.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, just overshared everything.
Overshared everything. And so, you know, it was putting you in a very difficult position. And I'll never forget the first time that you shared with me that Tim, you know, was smoking weed, and, you know, my reaction to it and how I felt about, you know, what I was seeing. But I think that...
How old were we?
Well, so you were a freshman in high school and he was a sophomore.
God, I was such a narc.
And I'm sure that at the time, if we're really being honest.
I was so young. I remember, young. I was really scared too. Like, I just remember being so scared thinking that he was smoking weed.
Right. Because you know, at that point, we're probably still thinking about, you know, the exercise that you did in middle school where you wrote that letter to yourself, which, you know, it's so.
Oh, where we swore we would never touch drugs or alcohol. Drugs,
right. And so.
But yeah, that worked out really well.
Well, but I think that, you know, but it's important. And it's important that kids know that, you know, there are real risks, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that for you, knowing what you knew about what Tim was doing was really difficult for you to hold. And as the years went on, it became even more difficult. And I remember that when you were in therapy, working through a lot of what you were holding on to with regards to guilt. And, you know, it really was a very difficult position for you to be in, to know what he was doing, to know to some degree the danger. You weren't yet an adult. You didn't really know the dangers that he was putting on himself or other people.
Well, and I think too, like, I also didn't realize the severity of like him using, if that makes sense. Like, I'll be super transparent. I've experimented with the same kind of thing, you know, and I didn't go down the route that he went down. And that has something to say about our brains, right? Like, we could not be more chemically different.
Right. And so, you know, there becomes that whole, the science behind what happens when really young emerging adolescent brains begin experimenting with drugs and alcohol, mm-hmm. and that you just don't know, you don't have a magic globe to look and to see what is going to potentially happen. So we don't know that.
I think we knew with Tim away when Tim started smoking weed. For most kids, right? Most kids, they experiment. And it doesn't even have to be with drugs, just even alcohol in general. They experiment with it. That's kind of an inevitable. Some kids don't, some kids do. Most probably will. With Tim's personality, had you known Tim, you knew that was going to be a really bad situation because Tim did not have an off button. So for us, I think for me specifically, I was so incredibly protective over him because I saw how vulnerable he was in a situation with drugs and alcohol, because I saw how he was incapable of saying no, or I'm good with one, or like whatever. Like, he did not have that ability. So I think for me, being the younger sister and knowing how he was in situations socially, I was like, you can't do this and try this. This is not something that you can just do.
So let's go back to that whole idea of the positions, the roles you played in this family.
Oh yeah, I was 100% playing older sister at that point in my life.
So you have been flip-flopped into all these different roles, right? He was your older brother, but really the relationship.
Oh, I was 100% older sister, protected, was so protective over him. Like, it was almost a fault of mine because I was just so concerned about him all the time. And I think if I really can identify back to when I genuinely started to feel something like anxiety, it was when I was dealing with Tim, when Tim was still alive.
Absolutely. So I think that, you know, you felt this obligation, you felt this responsibility to take care of Tim, to protect him, whether it was socially at school, whether it was with drugs and alcohol. And you were trying to also protect your younger brother,
who I'm like also viciously protective over.
But you were doing this with John from a very young age, because when Tim started having difficulty and our family was often, as we've talked about, in crisis, and things would start to get heated and Tim would start to argue and there would be difficulties.
Holes punched into the wall.
Well, what would we say? We would say, Allie, please take John and go upstairs.
And I had to pretend like everything that was going on wasn't affecting me, because I had to pretend like I was okay for those few hours or hour that I was with John, because I could not let it show that something was wrong because I had to protect him.
So when we talk about your strength, when we talk about your character, when we talk about what you've been through and how you have evolved and how you have just grown into this amazing, beautiful, strong woman, you've always had it in you. But you have been handed an awful lot in terms of you've just been given a lot of challenges, and you've handled them with strength and grace. But they're challenges that, quite honestly, many other people have not had to handle as siblings in a family. And ones that, you know, right or wrong, you could say, hasn't really been fair. Hasn't been fair that you've had to take care of an older brother, take care of your younger brother. You know, I mean, I look at the challenges you've had, and it really has been an unconventional journey for you throughout.
Yeah, but I think, you know, I could look at it like that and say, like, yeah, this is super unfair. Why was I dealt the hand that I was dealt? But as you have taught me over the years, I always look for the silver lining. And don't get me wrong, I can be really negative too. I'm human, right? Like, we all have our days where it's like, oh my God, why me? I feel so alone. But I do credit a lot. And I know, like you say too, like, you were this person from the minute you were born. But like, I think that because of all the challenges that have been presented and come my way, I have gained so much strength. So the strength that I had has just been multiplied. And I can look at it and say, yeah, it's really unfair that I have had to play so many different roles in my family. And we can be even more transparent. I've played caretaker to you and Dad before as well. And I've definitely had to play a role there that's been very unfair, and have been put in situations there that have been very unfair too, because you guys would be asking me questions about Tim that I was like, whoa, hang on. Now I'm being questioned here, where it's like, I have to then say to myself, am I going to honor my brother's confidentiality, or am I going to take care of him? And like, I was put in some very, very difficult situations, but it made me grow up faster than I probably should have. But I'm okay with that, because now at 24 years old, I look back and I'm like, good on me for having all that happen, because look at where I'm at now. I may not be living on my own right now, but I sure as hell can take care of myself.
Absolutely. I mean, you're right, Allie. I do. I look for the silver lining. I look for the collateral beauty. I do believe that, you know, we are given challenges in this life, and we either grow from them and we move forward and we use them to, you know, help ourselves and help other people, or we don't. I think our family has chosen to take our times of great hardship and difficulty, and we've tried to use that to better ourselves, to grow, to learn, and then to move forward and to help other people.
Mm. Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing that we've taken away from loss, is that there's so much growth and positivity that you can gain through loss. And one of the things that we've learned is that we can turn our grief into helping other people and love. And I think that what's important is to take all those things away and also look at what was negative and recognize the pain that you dealt with, because I think that's part of healing is recognizing your pain and sitting through it. And you got to deal with it. You can't run and you can't just constantly look at the positives and be like, well, yeah, I mean, my brother died, but he was great. I gained all this, because it wasn't great. It was the worst thing that ever happened to me.
Absolutely. It was the most devastating thing that ever happened to our family.
But you can't sit there and dwell. You got to deal, but you can't dwell.
You know, yes, you have to keep moving. You have to keep putting one foot in front of the other. You know, you can't look back with regret.
Never.
You have to just tell yourself that, you know, what I've been through, it has a deeper meaning. And that what our family has been through has certainly brought us closer together. And I think you coming through your young adult years, I think that you have shown such amazing growth, the way that you have handled your challenges and the way that you've persevered, you know, going back to school, finding your way, you know, staying home and just saying, it's not really what I want, but I know it's what I need.
Mom, it's really, really, really not what I want. This is really, really, really not what I want.
Well, I know, but as you have been able to accept, it's what you need right now. And
it's where I'm at right now, and I'm okay with that.
And it's okay. And you know, you went back to school and you found a passion for something. And
now you're sitting on my podcast.
And now I'm on your podcast. Wow.
Full circle, baby.
Absolutely. I couldn't be more proud of you. I couldn't be more proud of the young woman that you've become. And, you know, again, this mother-daughter relationship to me is so incredibly important. I think God blessed me with a daughter and only one for a reason. I used to joke about that, but it's true. I think I only have one girl for a reason. I don't know that I would have been able to handle 8 girls.
Well, I mean, if I'm the way that I am and you were to have anybody that's similar to me, I mean, you really would have been put through a lot.
Oh my God. I have a few gray hairs. I don't know how many I would have had if I had more girls. But Ellie, who is my girl, I'm so proud. And I cannot tell you, I never would have imagined we would be sitting here doing a podcast together. But you are one amazing girl. Amazing Ellie.
Oh my God. Okay, so I asked my mom to bring a quote, and now my mom always jokes that I don't know how to land the plane, but neither does she, and I've allotted about 10 minutes of our time here just so she can read her quote, because that's probably how long it's going to be.
So you may be surprised that my quote is not going to be 10 minutes.
Shocking.
I think you talked about this yourself, that you are the queen of quotes. I'm the queen of quotes. I look for constant inspiration in other people's words.
Yeah.
And I really, there's so many, I don't even know. There are so many that I could, you know, refer to that are some of my favorites. But I think in honor of this really special podcast that I'm doing with my girl, I will just say that a daughter is a little girl who grows up to be her mom's best friend. And that is exactly where I feel that you and I are at. And what I always hoped and dreamed it would be is that you and I would become best friends, that we've moved into the adult stage of a mother-daughter relationship, which is really unique. I will always be your mother.
Right, right.
But I can now be your friend because you are at an age where you do have to make your own choices and decisions and know that I will stand beside you. I will walk alongside you. I may not always agree with the choices that you're making, but I have to honor them. And I think it's really hard as a parent to let go. But at some point, we have to just trust that our children, that we've given them all that we can and all the tools in their toolbox to figure out. And I tell you this often, that I have to keep reminding myself that you have all those tools. And at the end of the day, you do make the right decisions. Even if you're stumbling along through whatever it is you're going through, you make it. At the end of whatever you're going through, you come out of whatever situation all the better for it. You really know in your heart who you are. And I could not be more proud of this beautiful, beautiful girl that I'm sitting here looking at.
Okay, so would you like to drop the handle for the nonprofit that you have created?
Absolutely. So
why don't you give a little background on what the nonprofit is first?
Yeah. So I created a nonprofit back in 2018 called Project Pause, the Tim Buckley Project. It's all about social emotional learning in youth by the use of therapy animals. And we do some pretty amazing things with our organization. If you want to find out a little bit more about who we are and what we do, we are timbuckleyproject.org. If you want to follow us on Instagram, we are projectpause_. And on Facebook, you will find us at Project Pause. I hope that you will learn a little bit more about my nonprofit and Allie's brother, Tim. So thrilled to be on this podcast, and I thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Mom. I love you.
I love you too, my girl.
As you all know, you can listen to all of our shows at uptomeradio.com or from one of your favorite podcast apps, such as Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Just search for Up To Me Radio, click on and follow my show. Follow Journeys Unconventional on Instagram at uptome.radio and on Facebook at Up To Me Radio. You can follow my own personal Instagram at Right Up Your Alley. Don't forget, I have an email that you guys can send into, which is abuckley@uptomeradio.com. And I will see you guys on Friday with some exciting news. Have a great rest of your week. Bye.